is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Hey everybody, just wanted to give you a quick heads up before we get to the show that this is the second part of a mailbag that David and I recorded earlier this week. The first part we had to throw out because it was mostly about trading for Serge Ibaka, which of course is no longer relevant since the Raptors traded for him. Anyway, this will be the last podcast of the week. We'll be back at it next week, so enjoy.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we got another mailbag for you this week. Kind of continuing from where we left off on the last mailbag, we got so many mailbag questions, keep them coming, so we're going to call this mailbag part two, breaking them up. So let's just get right into it. Alex from Sweden asks, I truly hope the Heat realize that this could be an opportunity to sell high and trade players who have shined during this winning streak for high draft picks and young prospects. Obviously, this question coming a couple of games ago. Right. More than anything, I want Miami to have the chance to be included in that future group of young stud teams like the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Timberwolves once the Warriors-Cavs era is over. What do you believe the Heat should do as we approach the upcoming trade deadline? And what do you think Miami will do?
That's an interesting one. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as what do we believe the Heat should do, I can't help but think that that's fool's gold there. Like, I think that it's interesting to say that you could potentially build a team of quote-unquote young talent, but you never really know how far that young talent will go. Even look at Minnesota. Minnesota was a team that I think a lot of people projected at the start of the year. Even a guy like Zach Lowe, who is as knowledgeable as they could possibly be about the inner workings of the league and is plugged in or more plugged in than anybody, projected that team to win 50-plus games. That's not going to happen. And you could argue that that's for a number of reasons. Maybe they had a couple minor injuries here and there. They lost Ricky Rubio for part of the season. Chris Dunn didn't necessarily take that next step as a rookie that a lot of people thought he would. But they've got three really talented players in Andrew Wiggins, the number one pick in the draft, Karl-Anthony Towns, the number one pick in the draft, and Zach LaVine, who unfortunately was lost for the year with the ACL injury. But, you know, those are young players that you think you can build a team around. And while that might still be the case, there's clearly something missing in each of them and around them. And that's part of the problem, is that you can't just have three young players and say, oh, that's it. That's the core of our team. We're going to continue building that. Something could happen. An injury like Levine's. Mm-hmm. Maybe he never comes back to the same explosiveness that he did. Maybe somebody gets traded away. Maybe somebody re-signs somewhere else, a huge offer sheet elsewhere. You know, it's harder and harder to look at building a core and keeping a core, although the new changes in the CBA, I think, are geared towards keeping that kind of core intact. So as far as what the Heat should do, if you're asking me personally, I think building the team by using both of those things. You want young pieces that you can continue to develop, but you also want proven players that you know you can count on and that you'll be able to win immediately with. Maybe your ceiling is lower, but that I mean, only one team wins a championship every year. So I don't know that every team should look at what their ceilings might be, because realistically, everybody's ceiling is second best at best.
So you think then what? That don't tank and don't fire sale, right? Don't sell high on Whiteside. Don't sell high on Goran Dragic. Keep him around. Right. Try to hit on this pick that we're going to have this summer. Sure. And then just make opportunistic moves where you can, and hopefully something comes of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, even during the loss part early on in the season before the streak, you and I both did not think that moving Goran Dragic was the right move. That I think he was still a guy that added a great dimension of offense. He can still, you know, continue to push the younger players on the team, that you could still build as a big part of the team, you know, maybe he's a little older, but again, you know, he's still playing at a really high level. I think he's playing at a particularly high level during the streak. So I think, you know, to say that you can trade away a guy like Dragic, who is better than most of any of the draft picks that you possibly get, with the exception of perhaps Markelle Fultz, who is still an unknown commodity, I don't know that you want to give up on a player that's already really good for the potential to get a player that might be great. I can't find myself ever going in that general direction, because I think the draft is such a crapshoot. And you know, there are a lot of people smarter than me and more knowledgeable that think that's the exact opposite way. But I look at teams that build draft, you know, build the draft and acquire draft picks and look at them as assets. And guess what? They don't necessarily pan out. Look at Boston. Boston plays really well right now, despite the number of draft picks that they have available, despite the assets they've collected. They've gotten all these draft picks and missed on all of them. And you could put that on Danny Ainge, sure. But look, I mean, we talked about it in our last mailbag, when arguably their best move was to acquire a guy like Jake Crowder, who's been a real contributor, or Isaiah Thomas. I mean, a guy who was the 60th pick in the draft. I think sometimes you get a good piece and they can fit in the right system, and necessarily looking for the top five or top 10 pick isn't the way to do it, because you can get a really good value lower in the draft. That's just one and done, I think, has changed the way players are evaluated, and you're based on potential. And that potential might never be realized. And plus, I think more and more, it's all about fit. Look at a guy like Dion Waiters on our own team, a top five pick. And for 4 years in the league, he didn't find that right fit. And he didn't necessarily take that level that a lot of people expected him to take. You could have blamed that on Cleveland's coaching. You could have blamed that on his struggling with Kyrie Irving. You could have blamed it on the return of LeBron James. Or you could blame it on the fact that Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, and Kevin Durant were already ruling the Oklahoma City Thunder roost. So to me, I think you have to find players that fit, are complementary, regardless of where they were drafted, and try to find them whenever possible. Look, we know now that Winslow isn't necessarily going to be the kind of player you can build around. We learned that this season, and that's fine. That means he can still be a really good player that you're not going to build around. He's a guy who can facilitate, who can defend at a high level. Why not keep him around? He does all the little things that Spoelstra loves so much, all the winning plays. Sometimes you just get lucky, and you find out that, you know, where they're supposed to be is not necessarily as the number one alpha on your team, if you want to use that terminology. You know, he's just a complimentary guy who can do a lot of things pretty, pretty good. And that's fine.
So I find myself flip-flopping on this all the time.
Sure, I understand. I get it.
And with that, so because I find myself on your side, and I find myself on the other side of this. I find myself on Alex from Sweden's side all the time. And so with that, I'll play devil's advocate to what you're saying then.
Okay.
Look, I don't think that there is a path for this current group to be a title contending team. I don't – and this is just being the devil's advocate. So
like, no, I hear you.
I don't know how high of a ceiling that a team that has Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic as its two best players, and Dion Waiters, you know, as – up there too. I don't, if he resigns, I don't know. I don't, that three doesn't beat the Cavaliers anytime soon. And so by the time the Cavaliers reign is over, and look, LeBron's going to play at this level for another 20 years, it feels like, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love are still both young players. Like, I don't know how I look once LeBron's not on that team, that the whole thing falls apart. So what's LeBron's see, like, what's LeBron's window? Do you even think about building a team that way? Because LeBron can get one injury in the playoffs, and then all of a sudden the Eastern Conference is wide open. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is here. Because even
I don't think there's a right answer.
I don't even think that because even if the Cavs go down, you're still going into a juggernaut in Golden State, right? Is it even like is the difference between losing in the Eastern Conference Finals and the NBA Finals worth it? That's a real question. I don't know the answer to it.
I think it's time that teams stop looking at title contention as being the goal, because I think it's ridiculous. Because I mean, I don't even think Golden State was built with title contention in mind.
But that's how I agree with you. I think that the best teams are built to the point where they can make a move to turn into. I think that look at
David
how
Lee
State,
gets hurt
Golden State
and
did,
Draymond Green fits in all of a sudden, and, that, and
now Green
you're
was right. Yes, and you know, Steph Curry, they did tank that. They sort of tanked. They did like a soft tank, like a Heat when they drafted Justice Winslow tank, and they ended up with Steph Curry. They could have easily ended up with Johnny Flynn if the Timberwolves had made the right decision there. But, you know, they ended up getting Klay Thompson, too, in the top 10. So they really built their team for the draft.
Yeah,
but
their
big move was swapping Mark Jackson for Steve Kerr. You know what I mean? That was their big opportunistic move. So it's I don't know.
It takes
you
want
to set yourself up with to be in a space to have an opportunity, just like the Heat did when they drafted Caron Butler. Then the next year they drafted Dwayne Wade. Then they were able to and they signed Lamar Odom, even though look, Lamar Odom was All Star caliber, but he's not Shaquille O'Neal, right? Like he's not LeBron. He doesn't make you a title team. He just makes you a good, better team than what you were, and that's valuable. But then they were able to swap Lamar Odom and Caron Butler and a bunch of other things for Brian Shaquille Grant. O'Neal.
Right.
So I'm a big believer in just leaving your options open. And if you just completely dismantle the whole thing, then maybe you don't, right? You're really just giving yourself the opportunity to build to the draft, and you're closing off trades and you're closing off free agency because you just want to acquire more and more draft picks to increase your chances of hitting the lottery in the draft. And that's taking away two of really the big three options of getting all-star players. That said, if this team is capped out at where it's at and it's stripped of assets as it is, this might be the only offseason where they're able to really make a move for somebody. And if they can't get him, if they can't get the star that they need this offseason, then it might be worth considering trading Whiteside and Dragic and these guys and just restocking the cabinet and just hoping to get, you know, look, you were able to find a Whiteside, you were able to trade for a Dragic before. Maybe you just restock the cabinet, get a bunch of draft picks, and then when it's time to, you know, bolster that roster, you make another Dragic-type deal, or you hope to keep hitting your, you know, diamonds in the rough with the D-League or something. I don't know. It's just like, if there was a right answer, obviously the Heat would have already done it. But that's kind of where I'm at. But we've spent a lot of time.
No, I mean, I think it's an interesting question. And I think, especially for Heat fans, and I was thinking, you know, listening to your answer and thinking to myself, you know, we just came off of this 13-game win streak. And what was more enjoyable,
right,
watching like the 2003-04 Miami Heat team, or this past version of the team with 13 wins straight, you know, where they were just competing and playing at a high level and everybody seemed like they were getting along, or those teams with, you know, LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, where they didn't really care about the 82-game regular season, but you knew that they were going to always push for the playoffs and that they were legitimate title contenders. What was more fun? I'm talking not just the playoffs. I'm talking about the regular season.
It's a big three season.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Look, I understand that perspective. I mean, look. I mean, 03-04 was great. A lot of people
on that same side of that coin, right? Is when you're a team like the Sixers or the Timberwolves or the Bucks, the sting of losing doesn't hurt as much because it doesn't matter. It's all about hope. Like, yeah, we're not good now, but we're going to be great in a year or from now. We're going to be
once
the Warriors and the Cavs. It probably doesn't hurt as much, right? Like, if you're
I disagree. I think it hurts all of them. I think you come from losing and they stay in losing. Look at Milwaukee. I mean, look, what happened with Jabari Parker was tragic, and who knows if he's ever going to come back to half the player that he was this season. But, you know, we looked at 3-4 weeks ago when this team was at a high and everybody's looking at Antetokounmpo and thinking he's the next great superstar. He's getting SI covers, et cetera. Parker's a great secondary piece there. They're going to get Chris Middleton back. Everything's great. Somehow they go on a 5-game losing streak that ends in Miami. You know, they were 5 games. They lost their 5th game against Miami. Their 4th game loss in Orlando was when they blew up in the locker room and had that 35-minute players-only meeting. I think the losing just creeps up on them. They might not know how to win. And having those young players, look at Minnesota. I mean, we were just talking about them. What was it that Thibodeau was looking to acquire at the beginning of the season? A guy like Jimmy Butler, a veteran who's been there. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he knows how to win. Whereas these guys, if they go onto a bad team, they stay on bad teams. It's very, very rare. I mean,
fans from the outside, they look at the Sixers and the Bucks and the Timberwolves, and they're like, wow, that must be so fun. Maybe, look, it's not – you're kind of looking at what they might be and not necessarily who they are. Like, we talk a lot – like, your Milwaukee point is a great one. Like, we talked a lot about how Milwaukee's finally arrived. Start the playoffs right now. They're not in the playoffs. Like,
no,
so
they won't be.
And they won't be, right. So, yeah, look, I don't necessarily want to be a young stud team. I just think you need to be, you know, just I'm using Alex's words here. You don't like the Bucks and the Sixers and the Wolves, as fun as that is, that's like a, not to sound like, look, we're so fortunate we get to talk about and root for the Heat. That's like a small market thing because that might be their only option. For Miami, your options are also free agency. Your options are trades. Like Goran Dragic demanded to get traded from Phoenix, and he was like, New York, LA, Miami. Those are where you're trading me. One of those places. Miami came to the table with an offer that Phoenix liked. And that's
can I bring up one
of,
more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, one more. I'm trying to think now. Has there ever been a team that has built a championship contender? Only a championship contender, like a championship contender built on just their own draft picks.
I mean,
like the Warriors come close.
The Warriors, right? But then they add Durant. I don't know how that.
Oh, they added Iguodala. I mean, he was their Finals MVP. Yeah. I mean, he was an established veteran with playoff.
But that's
experience.
What you're trying to get to, right? You're trying to find your Steph Curry and your Klay Thompson to the point where you're able to
that's
get Iguodala to come over.
Right.
So
that's
really,
what it is.
And that's basically been Pat Riley and Miami's whole thing was we're going to trade for these guys. Look, I think the new the old CBA really incentivized people to draft their stars, and I think that was a reason why you get the Sam Hinkies and stuff coming out and doing that. And maybe the new CBA is going to do that more as well. I also think that the new CBA is really going to incentivize people in trades, and the trading thing might be the way to go for Miami. And like, look, players want to play in Miami. That's a real thing, and we talked about what the streak meant. This streak has really sent waves in the NBA. Like, look, they're not going to make the playoffs still, probably. But this is a team that is always going to compete, and I know I can go there and I can win. And maybe if you're the Bucks or the Sixers and the Wolves, you're just grooming Karl Anthony Towns, or you're just grooming Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons or Giannis Antetokounmpo to get like, okay, once we're done with these small market teams that just don't have a culture of winning, we'll go to Miami and win a title there. Maybe that's what it is, and maybe that's just the circle of life in the NBA. Or maybe I could just dream and hope that. I don't know. Mm. So, all right.
I feel like we could turn this into our own podcast episode and answer all the mailbag questions in a third mailbag podcast.
We probably could, but let's just try to get through these because I don't even know what to do. We've got more.
I know.
All right.
We've got more questions. We've got great fans, and we love all of them.
Second question from Taylor Monk. With the new CBA, grabbing big-time stars in free agency is going to be so hard. That's why we need to do this rebuild on the trade market. Hey, this sounds familiar. In free agency, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. We got to rebuild on the trade market and in free agency, target guys like Paul Millsap or Kyle Lowry, whose current teams can't offer them the Supermax deal since neither of them were with the team that they were drafted to. In parentheses, unless I'm misunderstanding this concept. So the reason I wanted to read this whole question in full was because we've gotten a few mailbag questions and Twitter comments about this concept that's been really kind of circling the wagons around Miami Heat Twitter. This whole idea of bird rights.
Right.
Paul Millsap and Kyle Lowry do have bird rights with their teams. A bird right isn't when it's most commonly attributed to being drafted with that team, but bird rights are basically just acquired after being with the same team for 3 years, or being under contract for 3 years without being released or signing with another team in free agency. So you can get traded on the same contract,
right,
and that contract still has bird rights.
We acquired Goran Dragic's bird rights when we traded with Phoenix, and that's why we were able to exceed his salary cap hold in order to re-sign him.
So. Basically, players, they can sign that Supermax deal that we're talking about with this new CBA if they have bird rights. It's not quite the same thing as being on the team that drafted you. Bird rights are acquired after playing 3 seasons. And just like the Heat did with Dragic, that might be what they try to do with, say, Serge Ibaka, what we talked about in the first part of the mailbag earlier this week. But I like the idea that Taylor's going in, and this is kind of just something that is worth... It's a topic worth covering, right? Players that don't have bird rights. Are there players out there that don't have bird rights that become real free agents that everybody is on an equal playing field for, right? Where, you know, not one team can offer them more money than another team. So I looked at it and I kind of got a list together, and it's not nearly the likes of Paul Millsap or Kyle Lowry who can really, you know, change a team. It's guys like Jeff Green, Roy Hibbert, Jared Sullinger, Brandon Jennings, James Johnson for the Heat, Ty Lawson, Terrence Jones, Donatas Manyunis. Those are the guys that don't have their bird rights. So these are the guys that Miami might be able to sign. Any team are going to be able to sign, but these are like the fringe guys. These are the roster-filling role player that are very valuable, but not necessarily to that superstar or all-star type level, which is why the trade market, like we talked about in that first question, is going to be such an important thing. You know, you can draft a player and have them on that rookie scale contract and eventually own their bird rights, or you could trade a player that's already on bird rights, and that's kind of that's the sweet spot, right?
Yeah, I agree. You know, for more CBA information with a Miami Heat leaning, mm-hmm. I think everybody should be following Albert Nahmad over at heathoops.com. Yeah. He provides a lot of detailed information about the CBA. And again, a lot of it is skewed towards how Miami does their team building. You know, he's addressed Chris Bosch's contract situation, the Serge Ibaka trade potential, Tyler Johnson's deal when he was saved. He has all this information archived there. So, well, we don't recommend going to other websites where we don't personally write for. He's one of the best as far as a resource is concerned. Very, very good stuff.
Next question, then. This is from Ashley Hurds. I do not believe Jimmy Butler and Deion Waiters could play together. This is, I think, in response to a lot of our Jimmy Butler conversations. Deion Waiters wants to be the man, and he will not play second fiddle to no Jimmy Butler. I added a few words. I really feel he wants that opportunity. What do you guys think? It's interesting. You and I have kind of discussed this before. I don't know if we've discussed it on the show, but the idea of Jimmy Butler and Deion Waiters playing together. Look, I mean, he's already sort of sharing that backcourt, or he is. He's sharing the backcourt with Goran Dragic, and they have a great relationship, right? They named themselves after a nice convenience store. That's, I don't know. I don't know that there's a bond stronger than that. But Jimmy Butler walking in is going to want to be the man, right? If he gets out of Chicago, he's going to, where he can't be the man in Chicago because for whatever reason the Bulls, I guess, reportedly are reluctant to call him the franchise player, he's probably going to be looking that for, he's going to be looking for that from whatever team acquires him. I think he's worth it, but all in all, you're probably deciding between Jimmy Butler and Deion Waiters, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just thinking about us nicknaming ourselves the Stop and Shop, but that's not going to work either, is it?
Who's stopping? Who's shop? I don't know.
Then let the fans decide. Uh-huh.
Send that to our mailbag. What convenience store would you call Locked On Heat Podcast?
So as far as Waiters and Butler fitting in together, that is a tough one. I think like part of the allure of getting a guy like Butler on here for him would be the fact that he could finally become the team's superstar. And I think certainly that would be a little bit more difficult if you had a guy like Waiters who wanted to demand the ball so much. But I think part of it is also the fact that, you know, there's this narrative about Waiters that I think we've debunked and that his play is debunked. He's a guy who handles the ball a lot, but it's not like he doesn't share. He does dish it out to his teammates. He does get open looks for everybody. So I think he can fit alongside Dragic. I think he can fit us alongside. Maybe it's more difficult, you know, but I think they'd be willing to make those changes because of the overall benefit of having a guy like Butler on the team, to be honest with you. I think all of them, even Dragic, would handle a lower role. And I think Butler can play a complementary style. I think he's quick enough where he can push the pace a little bit. I don't think that's how he plays in Chicago, but a lot of that might have to do with the fact that they just don't have the personnel for it this season. And while maybe he could have done that when Derrick Rose was at his peak, that wasn't really when, you know, Butler was at his point as far as ascending into where he is now. He was coming off the bench or basically just a defensive stopper. He wasn't really the kind of player that we see today.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think he could and probably would embrace playing at a faster pace. I don't think the problem is Deion Waiters. I'm with you. I think that if you have Dragic and Deion Waiters and Jimmy Butler, and that's your 1-3, that can work because Dragic and Waiters already have a really good thing going where they're going to drive and they're going to kick. And if nothing's there, they're going to kick it to the other guy and they're going to drive and kick. And it's just going to kind of keep going like that. Butler fits that to a T. He's a guy that likes to drive and he likes to get other guys involved. He can hit three pointers. You know, he could play off the ball. I think he fits with that. I think the problem here is Hassan Whiteside, because if you all of a sudden become a perimeter oriented team where your top three players are perimeter guys, that's a lot fewer touches for a guy like Hassan Whiteside. And we know Whiteside, for better or worse, he gets going when he touches the ball. And if all of a sudden he is taking 7 or 9 shots a game, that ain't going to work for us on Whiteside. And all of a sudden he's not going to give you the same sort of output on the defensive end. He's not going to give you the same effort on the glass and rebounding. That's, I think, Whiteside is the problem here. So I think those three guys, look, you look at what Golden State has. You've got Curry, Klay Thompson, and you've got Kevin Durant. Those are all guys that want the ball, that need the ball to be most effective, but don't need the ball to be effective. And Dragic is a good enough three-point shooter that doesn't need the ball to be effective. Waiters, we'll see how his shooting continues. It's been inconsistent through his career. But if we just assume for the sake of this question that it is at this level, relatively, then he is not going to need the ball in his hand. So he could space the floor, as can Jimmy Butler. So that works if it's a ball movement motion type of offense. Who doesn't work in that is Whiteside. That said, to get Jimmy Butler, it would probably take trading Hassan Whiteside. So that might not be a problem. But in the hypothetical world that Ashley set up for us here, of course. So I think you and I agree. The Waiters thing is very much narrative. I don't think it would be a problem. Let's move on to our next question. And final question for this mailbag. From Ethan Huffman. If the Heat enter the buyer's market at the trade deadline, the player I consider moving is Tyler Johnson. I personally love Tyler, and I especially love him in a Heat uniform, but we have to use this opportunity to get away from overpaying during the back half of that deal. We've talked a lot this week alone about Tyler Johnson and that contract. Do you agree with Ethan that now is the time to move Tyler Johnson?
I don't think it's the only time. It's probably the best time, because I think a team looking to acquire him could look at next season where he's still in a relatively cheap deal and say, well, we can still get a season and maybe a third left on a really good value of a player who can potentially, you know, be a contributor and a high level one. Let's be honest. He can do a lot of things both offensively and defensively. The issue is then, again, in year three of that deal where he's going to be paid $20 million or close to $20 million. And the fact that, as we've seen from Tony Johnson as well, is that he can be slightly injury prone. I think it's just the style of play where he throws himself with such reckless abandon. The fact that he dunks with such authority at 6'1", and he puts himself out there where he can get hurt. He's been hurt in the 2 years that he's been with Miami. He missed about half of last season, I want to say, due to an injury. You know, he's missed part of this season as well. He gets a lot of injuries. And then, as we read from that great profile on ESPN, I mean, he plays through them, and that hurts him in the long term. So you wonder what kind of a player he's going to be in 5-6 years, whether or not he's still going to be able to play at this kind of high level. And, you know, I think if you can move the contract, you do so. It looked like a great decision, you know, early at the start of the season when you thought maybe you didn't know what you were getting out of Waiters. Maybe you could have gotten something out of, you know, Derek Williams. You didn't know what you were getting out of James Johnson. Still didn't know what was going to happen with Chris Bosh. You could have had him on the team. It makes a lot more sense then. But now, I think if they had known about Chris Bosh, they probably would have let him walk to Brooklyn. But it didn't happen that way. They had to match the offer. They still thought that Bosh was going to come in and play at a high level. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. So I think if you can make a move to unburden yourself of the contract, you try and do so. Again, you know, to Ethan's point, I think a lot of fans love that pesky, gritty, do-it-all, you know, a reckless abandon kind of attitude that he embodies so well. I mean, he came on so unexpectedly as a guy who was undrafted, who worked his way up from the D-League, who you didn't know was going to happen. He was such a spark plug a couple seasons ago when Miami had that veteran-laden team. All of a sudden, you got a 23-year-old kid who plays at such a high level, has such an energy to him. I think it's great, a lot of fun, and you're always rooting for a guy like that. He's undoubtedly one of the league's best success stories, and you know, he's going to be making a hell of a lot of money, whether it's here or elsewhere. I think from Miami's perspective, sort of, you know, from the front office's perspective, they'd like it to be elsewhere.
So I got a fake trade for you then.
Nice. Let's hear it.
So Tyler Johnson, we've talked about quite a few times. He's got the option to decline any trade between now and July 10th, right? He's got to accept any trade because of restricted free agency stuff. So we got to trade him to somewhere that he wants to go play at, right? So he's not going to get traded to a crappy team. Like, we're not going to be able to trade him to New Orleans, right? We're not going to be able to trade him to a bad team. Philadelphia. He's probably not going to say yes to Philadelphia. What about trading him back to the team that he always wanted to play for? Growing up as a kid, the Golden State Warriors.
Oh.
They could use some ball handlers, right, for that bench. Look, Sean Livingston, he's not getting any younger. His numbers basically across the board are down this year. It's kind of a quiet thing, but Livingston is kind of
a free agent, sir.
And he's going to be a free agent. So his deal comes off the books. Look, Golden State doesn't have their 2017 pick. They've traded that to Utah, but they've got a 2019 pick. You know who doesn't have a 2019 pick? Miami. Yeah, the Heat don't. So you trade Tyler Johnson for Sean Livingston and the Warriors' 2019 first-round draft pick.
Oh. Wow.
But so the Warriors do it because, yeah, 2019, they don't have to pay a first-rounder, right? And that's the year that Tyler Johnson – that the first of the two back-end deals of Tyler Johnson's current contract. So when he's getting paid like $20 million a year, that's that first year that comes into play. And so by then – Andre Iguodala will be retired, right?
He's a free agent this year, too.
He probably, re-signs, some minimum contract to stay in Golden State because he's not leaving. But so if he doesn't retire after this year, he retires by then. He's gone by the time Tyler Johnson's big contract kicks in. And Livingston won't be there. They could really use – look, they have one guy on the bench, Patrick McCaw, who they like. But, look, he's a rookie. He's 21 years old. They don't know how good he's going to be. Tyler Johnson is good now. He can create with the ball. I mean, we don't have to sell Tyler Johnson, right? He's a good player. So Tyler Johnson for Livingston, for Miami, Livingston contracts. His contract comes off the books, so you don't have to worry about that. And you're able to recoup a 2019 pick. Yeah, of course, the Warriors pick. It might not be any good. It might be the 30th pick in the draft, but it's a pick in a year that you don't have a pick for, and you're able to get out of that contract. And all in all, you're basically trading somebody that you called up from the D-League for a first-round pick. Not a bad return, right?
You think Golden State would do that this year in the midst of a title run?
100%, yeah.
To get rid of Sean Livingston?
It depends on what – I don't know. I think that locker room could withstand the blow of losing Livingston for the upside of what Tyler Johnson could provide. Tyler Johnson is better right now than Sean Livingston is.
Wow.
Livingston's having a tough year.
He's finishing at such a high level – around the rim. I mean, isn't his hook shot around the rim unstoppable?
That's his thing.
Right.
But everything else is not great.
Okay, I see. Okay. Yeah. So he doesn't do anything else. But I mean, isn't there some value in the fact that he contributes that? And
You're right. Maybe the Warriors wouldn't do it, but
I mean, we're floating it out there. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll
get Joe Lacob on the phone, right?
We'll get a phone call from Locked On Warriors, and we'll see what they want to do with that.
Danny LaRue, I'm sure he'll be happy with that.
He'll probably hate that trade. No, that seems like a – no, he would hate that trade. Danny LaRue wouldn't want to get rid of the first-round pick. But it makes sense, right? If you're a Warriors team that might need to acquire somebody that could play in the future and play now, I don't know. Anyway.
He's relatively cheap next year. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to have to re-sign Kevin Durant, right? I mean, didn't he sign an option deal? Yeah. Clay Thompson's deal, doesn't he come off?
You keep all the bird rights to all these players, so you're able to go over the cap to sign them.
Sounds good.
All right. That was my favorite trade. Okay.
I like it.
Well, that was our last mailbag question. And that's all we have for today. So whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.